This is the John Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya. Oh, greetings, Monica.
The podcast is over.
Why? Is it because I don't know the metric system?
It's because, I mean, yes.
Listen, I was raised in America.
But like half of it's the metric system and half of it's not. I'm so confused.
I don't know.
On the ruler, there's both inches and also centimeters.
Sim.
And also cm. You know, cm. No, it's because we already talked for an hour. It's over.
Oh, okay.
We spent an hour talking.
Well, that was the episode.
You know?
So tune in next week.
Tune in next week. We just didn't record any of it.
No.
So.
It seemed like a lot. Like sometimes it feels like a lot for Aaron to go get the equipment from upstairs.
And, yeah. So you know. maybe we just start recording things on our phones.
Yeah. We just record every conversation.
Would that be better?
If maybe. Report back, guys.
Maybe I can reconfigure my SimpliSafe to just be recording us all the time.
That sounds so awful.
It sounds horrible. What if I say something like bad? Like you know, I'm going to throw away this perfectly good cheesecake.
People
are going to be so mad about that.
That's something that would happen because Aaron is your husband.
It's true.
You know?
I wonder if anyone else out there, if you know of someone / have someone in your life that like is super freaked out by like expiration dates.
Yeah.
And like thinks that sell by and expired by are like the same thing. I feel for you. We should start a group.
Food waste is a global problem.
Exactly.
And 70% of it is from Aaron Jacob.
Yeah. Aaron is the number one leading cause of food waste in America. We keep thinking that it's like, you know, overconsumption, overproduction. No, it's Aaron.
It's Aaron, 1,000%. You're welcome.
Jesus Christ.
He has been dragged.
And if I'll like make leftovers and I put the leftovers in the fridge, the next day he'll be like, is this still good? I'm like, I literally made it yesterday.
My favorite thing is when he asks about garlic, which is literally like has a preservative shell.
Yeah. It's just chilling inside of its like thing.
You could have garlic for a fucking month.
You could have dried garlic.
Do you believe me? He doesn't believe
me. He's shaking his head no.
Well, who has more food allergies? You.
What?
Too careful. That's what I'm saying. If you had eaten more expired chicken in your life, Aaron, maybe you could tolerate nuts.
That's true. What I will... If you had eaten more expired chicken, then you'd be the president of Netflix and everything would be fine.
Netflix and chill for Aaron can only be almond and chill because yes. That's the only nut.
We found out macadamia nuts. He's fine with too.
Oh, macadamia and chill. That's fun.
Mac nut.
Netflix and chill.
Macflix and chill.
This has gotten out of hand.
HBO Mac. Netflix, HBO Mac. You can't do anything with Hulu. There's nothing. You can do nothing. Hulu's such an odd name. Hulu. Hulu?
Cashew.
Cashew. It's just...
This is too much. It reminds me of that scene in Best in Show where he's just naming all the nuts. Cashew nut. Pine nut. Pistachio nut.
Pistachio.
Oh no.
Oh no.
I'm sorry. I hit the microphone.
All right.
Let me wipe the tears out of my eyes, all right?
All right. I'm so sorry.
My eyes are very watery.
Well, yeah. Have you been, you told me you've been rubbing them with the stuff on your eyelid.
Yeah, since last night. And very it good. Has helped, started helping. But I have never had eyelid problems prior to this.
Why not?
I mean, I don't know, because I have gifted skin.
You do have gifted skin.
Thank you. It's all the expired chicken.
Enough. I feel like anyone who's ever eaten at Chipotle understands this, but like three out of every 10 times you get Chipotle, you will get sick from it.
Yeah, like 30% of the time.
Literally 30%.
You'll get diarrhea.
100%, 30% of the time.
okay, Monica.
Yes.
Who are we talking about today?
We're talking about someone very, very special.
Very special.
Very beautiful to look at.
Very beautiful, especially in 2011.
Exactly. We're talking about the one and the only Bradley Coops.
Bradley Cooper. Okay, Monica, I'm going to tell you about Brad.
Tell us what's bad with Brad.
What's bad with Brad? Okay, Bradley Charles Cooper is an American actor, filmmaker, and some may say songbird.
Maybe it's time to do all these days. Turn around, I'm just trying to take one more look at you.
Guys, name that movie. Come on.
And you're on my drinking my lady. In the shallow. The end. And then he dies. Sorry to spoil it for you.
Sorry.
There's already like seven other
three
movies.
Three others before it also say that he kills himself. So
yeah. He either throws himself into the ocean or in this case, he hangs himself, unfortunately.
But he fed his dog first, which was nice of him.
That was very sweet.
Okay. His father started introducing him to films at a young age, which inspired him to be an actor, which his parents were against until they saw him perform an excerpt from the play The Elephant Man. Cooper graduated with honors from Georgetown University in 1997 with a BA in English. You go, girl.
What can you do with a BA in English?
Become Bradley Cooper. Okay. I think. Okay. In 1999, he made his television debut in, wait for it, Sex in the City.
I love that episode.
You remember that episode?
Of course I do.
It's
Are you kidding
episode,
me?
In case we need to jog the listeners' memories, is the episode where Carrie wakes up late after a night of partying.
Yes.
For a photo shoot where she's supposed to be like single and
30.
Yeah.
And
exclamation point. But then they did like, 30 and single
question mark
and she looks like shit on the cover
and she's like smoking a cigarette. It's horrible.
And then Bradley Cooper sees it at a newsstand and they're on a date and he like comes up and puts it against someone and he's like, is this you?
And she's like,
and then she iconically stands up in a convertible and walks out.
It's true. Okay. God, I love that show.
He went on to audition for the master class graduate degree at the Actor Studio and was selected by James Lipton and received an MFA in acting from the Actor Studio Drama School at the New School in New York.
Lipton as in Lipton Teas.
Yep, that's him. His cinematic debut came in the ensemble comedy Wet Hot American Summer in 2001, but it wasn't until his breakthrough role in 2009's The Hangover that he reached both critical and commercial success. He has been nominated for many, many awards and sadly won very few of them, but most importantly, he was named People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive in 2011.
What an honor.
And he's also the literal daddy to one daughter with a model, because of course he is.
Dude, he has an apartment in Paris, he has an apartment in New York,
yeah,
and he has a house here.
French fluently.
He's like, je m'appelle Bradley Cooper. Je m'appelle Bradley. Oui, oui. Ça va?
Je suis acteur.
Je m'appelle Bradley.
J'aime les films.
J'ai testé les télévisions. But j'aime les films. J'aime Guillermo. That's Bradley.
That is Bradley.
And we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now back to the show.
Monica, tell us about the first movie.
Gladly. I will tell you guys about the hit classic comedy film, The Hangover.
The Hangover!
It came out in 2009, obviously written by John Lucas and Scott Moore, directed by Todd Phillips, director of Joker, but we forgive him.
Do we?
We do.
Okay.
We do. I think we forgive him.
Okay.
2 days before his wedding, Doug Billings, played by Justin Bartha, travels to his bachelor party in Las Vegas with his best friends, Phil Wenick, played by Bradley Cooper, Stu Price, played by Ed Helms, and his bride's unconventional brother, what a word, Alan Garner, played by Zach Galifianakis of, Between Two Ferns. Oh, so good. The quartet rents the best suite in Caesar's Palace, not the real Caesar, just the one in Las Vegas. And they go to the roof to celebrate. But the next morning, Phil, Stu, and Alan have a hangover, and they don't recall anything they did last night. Even worse, the groom, Doug, is missing.
Chaos ensues.
If you are a man and this isn't your favorite movie, congratulations. You are not a red flag.
We can add The Hangover to the list that also includes Pulp Fiction and Fight Club.
Yeah. If your favorite movie is Pulp Fiction, Fight Club, and
The Hangover. Or Superbad, honestly.
If you're a... Okay, here, this is my argument for this. Uh-huh. If you're a woman who loves Superbad,
yeah,
mad respect.
You're fucking cool.
You're so fucking cool.
Yeah.
If you're a guy who's like, my favorite movie is Superbad.
Of all time.
Red flag.
Agree.
If you're a man who's like, my favorite movie is The Hangover. Red flag. If you're a man who's like, my favorite movie is...
But I think if you're a woman and you say your favorite movie is The Hangover, I think you're just trying to get men to sleep with you.
Sometimes I feel that way. I genuinely love...
I mean, I think it's hilarious, Hangover, but yeah.
But, you know,
yeah.
What are you going to do
about weigh in,
it?
Gentlemen.
Weigh in. We have two men sitting at our table today. It doesn't usually happen, but here we are. give us your thoughts on what we just said.
Only people in...
I like it. Listen, if you're a dude that was in high school when The Hangover came out.
But it's your favorite movie of all time?
No, but it was your favorite movie that year.
Sure, but if you're a man and you say your favorite movie of all time is The Hangover, red flag.
Red flag.
I had an old roommate who...
Aaron's like, shut up.
Good Will Hunting, and that was also a...
That's also a red flag.
Good Will Hunting's a red flag.
That's someone who wants to like be a film person and
no. Okay, you know what? Let's ask. I already know the answer to Aaron's because we both already know the answer. But what is everyone's favorite movie?
Of all time.
Not you and not me. We've said it too many times.
We've said it.
But Aaron, Sebastian, what are your favorite movies as men?
You've been put on the spot.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard my voice in this mic before. Jesus Christ. I mean, probably Star Wars 5.
Ever?
Probably, yeah.
Ever?
That's the one that I return to most often. It's like a comfort for me.
Sebastian, go ahead.
Listen, I will pull out something sharp and defend myself for this.
Oh, no. Is it going to be red flag?
Gangs of New York.
Whoa, red flag. Red flag. Okay. I would prefer if you had said The Mask.
Okay.
Well, okay. Back to The Hangover. I genuinely sometimes believe, like, okay.
Yeah.
I understand the argument that, like, if you, because this movie came out in, like, you know,
2009.
In the middle of, like, people's high school experience, essentially, right. A lot of guys, like, will really, you know, it becomes, like, one of those aspirational films where you're, like, as a man, you're like, man, like, it would be amazing to have this, like, bachelor party in Las Vegas.
It's when like Reservoir Dogs.
Yes, yes. When I get older,
yeah.
I'm going to be this movie.
I'm going to do The Hangover.
I'm going to do The Hangover. Yeah, essentially.
I'm going to find Heather Graham.
Yes.
And I'm going to marry her in a chapel.
And then I'm going to have a baby.
Rip out my own tooth.
But anyway, I think just, like, face value, this movie is stunning.
Wait.
It's shot very well.
Monica, I have a really quick just...
Oh, a detour.
Detour?
Give it to
kind
us.
Kind of. What? Okay, 2022.
Oh, God.
Group costume, the four people from The Hangover.
I feel like I would be Phil. I would 100% only want to be Bradley Cooper.
So. Okay. Who would Aaron be?
Who would you be, Aaron? Probably Ed. Ed Helms' character.
Or the groom that gets left on the roof and has a sunburn.
Probably Doug.
I feel like he's Doug.
Who would you be?
I think I'd be the dentist.
I feel like you would, and you would be, you'd be like sexy Ed Helms.
With one tooth blacked out?
One tooth blacked out, but like it's a mini
skirt. I carry around a blow-up doll that's supposed to be Heather Graham.
Yes.
Or Sebastian can just be Heather Graham.
Or Sebastian is Zach Galifianakis's role, but instead he's the tiger.
He's the tiger.
You're the tiger.
No, you could be Zach Galifianakis and you can carry Carrie in a baby carrier like Carlos.
I'd say I'm Dr. Ken, but...
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I'll be Zach Galifianakis.
You can be.
Then can I carry Carrie?
You can carry Carrie. And then they all got carried away. Yeah. I like that. That was good detour.
Thank you. I had to voice that thought that I was having.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, here in this safe space.
I hope everyone knows. We say this out of love.
Yeah.
We're not trying to judge anyone, but we're also really heavily judging people based on how they like the hangover.
Yeah, we judge a lot of things, but you know, like at the end of the day, I don't actually care.
No, you do you, girl.
You do you.
Man.
Anyway, yes, your point. The beautifully shot movie.
It's so gorgeous.
Todd Phillips knows how to make a movie.
Okay.
God bless. Kind of.
This is very early on in the film. Well, maybe we can touch on...
Well, he made that movie. He did make it, which is a feat.
It's true. You know what? Let's just get this out of the way. If you haven't already heard, like, our... I think it was the Joaquin Phoenix episode.
We're not doing Joker.
We're not doing Joker. Reason being is we both fundamentally hate everything about that movie. Yeah, and we have our reasons. I can't remember which episode we've expressed them on.
I think multiple.
I think a lot. We have a lot of like really sincere opinions about the Joker. Yeah. And we think it's genuinely very problematic in a lot of different ways.
I agree.
And so Todd Phillips, you get like a point off for that. But The Hangover is a gorgeous film. There's a scene very early on in the film when they're all like driving to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And there's like that classic scene of them like going down the freeway. And it's like deserty and the sky is like lit just so perfect. Like everything Swingers. Is so perfect. I was literally about to say it's exactly like Swingers.
Does Todd like Swingers?
Yes.
Who doesn't?
Swingers
all
has
roads lead back to John Favreau. Swingers. That's why we're on this podcast.
Influenced so much. I just like it's gorgeous. Uh-huh. And you stop and you pause the movie and you're like, what? Like am I watching like a raunchy sex comedy or am I watching like a gorgeous film? I'm so confused. Because up until then we really had only ever seen like these raunchy sex comedies.
Correct.
When did like American Pie come out? That's what
Before.
I want to know.
Before 2000?
Early 2000s.
99?
That's what I feel like.
Aaron?
That's really what we knew to be like a rated R sex comedy.
99. Ooh, she got it.
Yeah, and then like The Hangover came out and people were like, "What? You can make rated R films that are comedies that are like
good
buddy comedies like this?"
Yeah.
What? Cuz I see the milestones as like Superbad and Hangover were like really pushing that and trying to like make like movies. Yeah. Like, hey guys, let's let us bring this forward. Let us not do direct to TV / American Pie.
I think you could also argue though that Wet Hot was also trying to do the same thing because it was like really self-aware comedy.
Yes, which Bradley was also
which
in.
Was also it. We contemplated doing it, but it's just such an ensemble piece.
It's such an ensemble piece and like his comedic chops really shine through in The Hangover.
They do.
And he does.
But in a different way.
He does the like hot, I don't care, I'm here to party in such a funny and authentic way.
Yeah.
And I think like him not give, like his character not giving a fuck.
Yes, he's like, he's the guy that you always hate because he's beautiful and takes nothing seriously.
And takes nothing, but he also fucking hates his life. Like, he's hot and you think that he's like a high powered executive. He's fucking not.
He's a teacher.
He's a high school teacher. I think he's a high school teacher. Yeah. He's a high school teacher.
Or a principal, one of the two.
He's definitely not a principal.
He could be principal.
This bitch is asking for like money.
Principale.
From his students. And it's really funny because he fucking hates his life and he hates the fact that he's married. He hates that he has kids, which we don't hear about for the entirety of the movie. It's literally just in the beginning where he's like, I fucking hate my life.
But then at the very end, he realizes that he is grateful for them.
Exactly. Yeah, but anyway, that's like Bradley's central role in the film is like, he just plays the handsome douchebag.
I would argue it's like the leveled up version of his character in Wedding Crashers.
Yes.
You know?
No,
because that role was much more like blatant. Like asshole just for the sake of being an asshole.
Ugh.
But Stu in this movie, that's his character's name. No, Phil.
He's Phil, yeah.
Phil, right. Phil's character in this movie is just like the hot dick, but like you need him to have a good time.
Yeah, and he's also like honestly the most competent of all of them.
Yeah.
Which is really surprising because there's a fucking dentist in the mix. And you'd think that motherfucker has like drills on him all the time. No, he don't.
He do not.
He do not. He has a polo shirt and a pager. How does that help you at all?
The thing that I think I'm most amazed by Bradley Cooper in this is like the level of chill he's able to maintain for like 90% of the movie. Because it, like everything If you haven't seen The Hangover, you have to see it. But like everything in this movie that could go wrong goes wrong, or like gets crazier. Like the dial on crazy just gets turned up like to the max every 5 minutes. And he's just chill the whole fucking time until like close to the end when he breaks and thinks they're fucked. And that's a really rewarding moment.
It's very rewarding. It's this movie is Murphy's Law. This movie really was like, you know what? Everything that can go wrong will go wrong to these men. I think a lot of times, I've seen this movie a lot, like multiple times in my lifetime. And sometimes I'll just pop it on at like parties in the background. Like it's one of those movies that everyone has seen. It has existed and it has its like place in the cultural zeitgeist that is still relevant even today.
Yes.
People talk about The Hangover in social settings multiple times. There are so many references from The Hangover that people are and keep in mind, this is a fucking trilogy. Mm-hmm. Like The Hangover trilogy.
I don't even remember what happens in the other ones.
I don't know. I think they go to like Vietnam.
Oh, right. It's like Thailand or Vietnam or something, right?
It's Thailand. I think because I think it's like they go to Bangkok.
Yes.
Yes. Because
what happens in the third one? Is there a third one?
They go back to Vegas.
Yes.
Is Heather Graham in that? I love her in this movie. Or I love Heather Graham. I mean, for a moment, Heather Graham really could have been much bigger than she is.
She really could have, couldn't she have?
Yeah, but I don't think anyone took her seriously.
I don't think anyone took her seriously either.
She's fucking fire in Boogie Nights. Go watch her. Oh,
she's so good in Boogie Nights.
Roller Girl is such a good part.
Roller Girl is the part.
Yeah.
You want to be Roller Girl.
I mean, kind of, until the terrible scene.
Oh, yeah.
In the limo.
You really don't want to be Roller Girl.
You don't want to be Roller Girl then.
You want to be the opposite of Roller Girl in the limo. God. But anyway.
Anyway, back to Brad.
Bradley does something really magical in this movie, which is like he gets you on his side very, very quickly. Yeah.
He's like charismatic, annoyingly so.
He's very annoyingly charismatic, but not so much so that he's not funny, right? Like he's charismatic and hot, but somehow also manages to be like genuinely very, very funny. His comedic timing is perfect. Fucking impeccable.
Yeah, Bradley Cooper is like a really underrated comedic actor, I think.
Underrated. And even more so, like I think his comedy chops really shine through in this movie, obviously, because it's a comedy film. But I would also argue that his comedy chops really shine in the next movie that we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Yes.
Equally so. Yes. And in a very different, like very more different. Chaotic way.
In like a I could win an Oscar way.
Yes, exactly. I think what The Hangover did for Bradley was establish him as like, he can do more than just like stand there and look hot / be that chaotic comedy guy from Wet Hot. Like, he can kind of do everything, and it's a little bit scary when you find a unicorn like that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And also when you find someone who can so easily have that like level of chemistry with like two other huge comedic brains. Yes,
the fact that he can even like, the fact that he has the chops to like stand next to these honestly comedy giants is kind of crazy to me. Like, the fact that he and Zach Galifianakis can like do a banter.
Their chemistry
thing
is beautiful.
Oh, their chemistry is so gorgeous.
Okay, Monica, between the two of us, who would be Phil and who would be Alan?
Honestly, I feel like we genuinely switch back and forth.
Okay. Gun to your head. Who?
Oh my God.
This is like the great debate of 2021 regarding Heat Miser and Snow Miser.
Oh, I still have feelings about that drama. I still have a lot of feelings.
What did we land on? I can't remember.
We landed on that you were fire and I was snow.
Yeah.
Or you were Heat Miser and I was Snow Miser. Yes.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm Mr. Snow Miser.
Okay.
But we've gone back and forth, which is why I'm haunted by our arguments about that. I can't stop. I close my eyes at night and all I can see is us.
All you hear is me singing, I'm Mr. Heat Miser.
Exactly. I can't stop. It's like that. It's again, it's like his character in the next movie. I can't stop hearing the song.
Every time you hear the song from the fucking claymation Christmas movie, you just like, I just cut like, someone.
I lose my shit. Yeah. No, I don't know. Gun to my head.
Gun to my head. I don't know. I guess I'm dead.
Yeah. I guess I'm deceased because I'm just gonna stand there and be like
Okay, fine. I will accept that we go back and forth.
I think we go back and forth. Yeah. I think sometimes I'm Phil, sometimes you're Alan.
Yeah. I would argue.
More so I'm Alan and more so you're Phil.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part we switch.
I would agree.
Quite a bit.
Okay.
I think
I'm glad we had this talk.
I think it's like power top and bottom.
Bossy bottom.
Yeah, bossy bottom. I think we like go back and forth between those. Oh my god.
Oh, I hate us.
Yeah. I feel like that would be a great Halloween costume though.
Bossy bottom and power top?
Yeah. But like in reference to The Hangover. Oh my god.
Okay. Well,
I'm a lone wolf. And now I am accompanied by other wolves. I now have a wolf pack. Of other lone wolves that all came together to become one pack.
One wolf pack.
Ow.
Ow.
Ow. Ow. Ow.
If I do that enough, will Carrie start barking?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Anyway, we wanted to talk about this movie specifically because this is where Bradley got his like big film start.
His big break. Yeah.
And you really see a little bit of that glimmer of comedy genius kind of shine through that ends up following him through like even in fucking Licorice Pizza.
Yeah, dude.
Goddamn.
He's hilarious in Licorice Pizza.
He's so fucking fun. And like you see little bits of that like assertive comedy.
Yeah.
That's the only like phrase I can use to describe like how he comedies.
I really didn't used to take Bradley Cooper seriously as like an actor.
Really?
And then, yeah. But then as I got older and I watched his stuff, I was like, oh, he's actually really fucking talented. He's
very talented.
Yeah.
I can only describe his comedy as being very assertive.
Yeah.
Just very like, brah. Yeah. So you get your first glimpses of that in The Hangover. And The Hangover really relies on Bradley Cooper to be what it is.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. Without Bradley Cooper, it's just a bunch of like dickheads in Vegas. When, you know,
it's just Zach Galifianakis and a baby.
He keeps them all in check. He really does.
He does.
He's fabulous.
Okay. Well, I guess that takes us to our second film.
Yes.
The, I would say, controversial one.
I would say maybe controversial.
I think a lot of people like this movie.
I think a lot of people like it. I think that there's like a good...
I had shifting feelings about this movie.
I think a good minority doesn't like it.
Sure.
I think that's what I will say about it. I don't know that I'd call it controversial.
Okay, fine.
But
whatever.
We can rock, paper, scissors about it.
Okay. Rock, I win.
Oh.
So the next movie is Silver Linings Playbook, which came out in 2012, written and directed by David O. Russell, who can never cast anybody except for Jennifer Lawrence in his movies, but it's fine. Based on the novel by Matthew Quick. After a stint in a mental institution, former teacher Pat Solitano, played by Bradley Cooper, moves back in with his parents and tries to reconcile with his ex-wife. Things get more challenging when Pat meets Tiffany, played by Jennifer Lawrence, a mysterious girl with the problems of her own. This is a very vague synopsis.
It's so vague.
On purpose, though, because there's simply too many details to the what the fuck is happening in the plot.
There's too much going on in this movie for it to just like amount to what that shit ended up being.
Correct. Yeah. And I really did not like this movie the first time I watched it when it first came out because, and I don't like Jennifer Lawrence. It's just how it is. And I was really mad that she won the Oscar. After watching it the second time, I'm still mad that Jennifer Lawrence won an Oscar.
I try to forget that Jennifer Lawrence has won an Oscar because of that whole, like, she fell over.
Also, she's 22 in this movie, which is like, this is one of those things where I kind of go back and forth between like, yeah, when you're an actor, you should be able to act things that you don't know that aren't your circumstances. But I was like, genuinely, how much can you relate to this at 22? Of her fucking plight of being married for like several years and then her husband getting slammed into by a car and et cetera, et cetera. Like, I don't know.
It's hard because I also don't know how old Tiffany's supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think just older.
That's the problem.
But yeah.
My assumption is early 30s.
Yes.
Because she got married and then her husband only died 3 years later.
Yes.
So that's like my assumption.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. And yeah, like, I know Bradley Cooper is supposed to be like in his late 30s, early 40s kind of a deal. Because he's been married for a while. He's very established. Mm-hmm. That kind of deal. Once again, playing a high school teacher.
An ex-high school teacher in this case, though.
Yes. I will start off by saying that this is one of my favorite movies of all time. But I also like movies like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
This is true.
Like, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I will say that, like, watching him in this movie was one of, like, my favorite things that I've seen lately.
He lets go in such a genuine way mm-hmm. in this movie that you don't see him do up until this point.
Yeah.
Like, you have not seen him let go in the way that he lets go in this movie.
Yeah.
And then I think this movie allowed him to do other projects where he got to play characters that were a little bit more challenging than characters he got to play before that point.
Right.
And you see his, like, real, genuine, dramatic chops shine mm-hmm. through, and it's very rewarding.
Yes.
Like, there is this, it's not a running gag, because it's, like, I guess it's just, like, a motif in the film, mm-hmm. where there is this song that plays, it's called Ma Chérie.
Amour.
Amour.
By Stevie Wonder. You know the big French artist Stevie Wonder.
Monsieur Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder.
And it plays every single time he has, like, it triggers him, essentially. It first triggers him in the therapist's office.
Yeah. And okay, I have a really big problem with the fucking therapist.
Oh my God. Dr. Patel?
Like, I was just watching him the whole time and I was like, I know that this is fiction, obviously, but like, what the am I supposed to genuinely believe that a therapist is intentionally triggering their bipolar client in public?
Yes.
And then reprimanding him in the session, being like, you have to forget about that song. Like, that simply wouldn't happen.
Yes. That's the thing. It's like, it's hard because there's so many things in this film where you're like, a therapist would not do that. Like, a therapist would not push him to go, like, I have always questioned why Dr. Patel pushed Pat to, like, go and be friends with Tiffany and, like, pushed him to do the dance comp. Like, he pushed him by manipulating him into thinking that it would get him closer to Nikki, when in reality, like, no one's end game is for him to get closer to Nikki.
Yeah, he was just like, oh, well, if you do this, you can get closer to Nikki. It's like, but the whole fucking point is to not.
It's not, because he has a restraining order.
She has a fucking restraining order out against you because you beat the shit out of her boyfriend.
Yeah, so Dr. Patel is the only... honestly, I have two problems with this movie. You can probably guess number one. But number two is I have a problem with Dr. Patel's character.
Also, and I mean, this, I sound like an asshole because I'm in grad school for this right now. So I feel like I'm acting like I know everything.
What?
But that's not what I mean. But when he fucking sees him out at the tailgate and then he just like goes home with him. And I was like, this is so many violations of confidentiality.
So many violations. So yeah, obviously my first problem is just Jennifer Lawrence in general.
Yes.
I think that quite literally Tessa Thompson can replace Jennifer Lawrence in any film and it would be a success.
You know, I agree. She would be amazing in this movie.
She would
do a remake.
Incredible. I'm just gonna like superimpose.
I mean, we have the technology
into these films.
We have the technology.
It's like her costume from Thor, and she's in like Silver Linings Playbook. She's like in full body armor, like doing the ballroom dance scene.
Honestly, it would be better.
It would be so good.
Maybe they would have gotten a higher score.
The only thing I will say about Jennifer Lawrence in this film is I do love the things that are coming out of her mouth. And that's the problem. The script is so...
The script is really good.
The script is incredible.
The script is really good. I just don't like her delivery.
I don't love her delivery.
She just screams everything.
She screams everything. She's like, I'm crazier than you.
I'm so crazy.
I hate Raisin Bran. Like... It's very, I'm not a huge fan of her, but y'all already know.
Yeah,
but, I respect her hustle though.
But you know, everyone else in this movie is amazing.
Incredible.
Just a moment for Robert De Niro, because one of the best things he's ever been in.
So good.
In his later life.
He was born to play the role of like Pat Senior, Patrizio.
With his OCD and his
Oh my God.
Like,
I'm not superstitious. You're here. You have to get turn the juju
and
around.
And then he starts crying and he's like, I just want to do this to spend time with my son. Can't you do this one thing for me? And you're just like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Dysfunctional.
And he's also hilarious in this movie.
He's so funny.
Like the scene where Jennifer Lawrence barges in and like calls him out on all of his bullshit. Bradley Cooper's like, now you like her now. He's like, I have to say I do.
I have to say I do. He's so fucking funny in this. Him and Bradley have a chemistry that is undeniable. Yeah. In the scene where they're beating the shit out of each other, because I think Bradley Cooper in the beginning of the movie like rents out all of these books that are like on Nikki's syllabus, and he like goes through them. He reads, I believe he reads The Sun Also Rises by Ernest Hemingway.
Yes.
I also had a bitch fit after reading that book. It is what it is. The ending is in fucking insane.
Sure.
And literally just made the entire book like not worth it. These are my notes, Ernest. but it's really funny because he finishes the book and he's like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
And he trashes the room. Mm-hmm. He throws the book out the window, mm-hmm. breaks the window, barges into his parents' room to like argue with them about this fucking book. And he's like, okay, well, you know what? Like I'm not going to apologize for this. And he's like, well, you find Ernest Hemingway and have him come and apologize to us. And it's that to me was like, it gave me a real glimpse at Robert De Niro's character in this film, because I think he tries his best to keep his son at bay for his wife.
Yeah.
But also like he feeds into his son's bullshit in a way that only a father can.
Well, also
a father with the same flaws.
Yeah.
Can.
They're also very clearly making the connection of like, yeah, his own like mental illness has affected his sons.
I mean, let's remember that the reason why he's sitting at home watching the birds play is because he got kicked out of the Eagles stadium.
Yeah.
And like was fucking banned.
Exactly.
He was banned from all like live Eagles games.
Exactly.
So he sits on his couch and he turns his remotes and he holds it and rubs his handkerchief and he watches from his chair because he also has the same issues that Pat does. Mm-hmm. It's just probably completely undiagnosed.
Yeah.
And he never went to the extent that Pat did and got himself like locked up for it, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
But they are reflections of each other.
Oh yeah.
And they feed into each other's bullshit in a way that only two people in that space can.
Yes.
It is mind-boggling to watch. You're sitting there as a viewer and you're like, oh my God, like I see this happening and I see this cycle and it's never breaking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how Pat is actually gonna ever get any better when this is who his dad is. When his dad is literally him in 20 years. Like that's hard to watch.
It's really, really hard to watch. So back to Bradley.
Sorry guys, just got to sneeze and then ruined everything.
I'm sorry, I had to sneeze. Okay, so Bradley Cooper's acting in this movie, incredibly special, primarily because of the delivery, I would say, of his lines, which, I mean, maybe that seems like a given, but it's special in this movie. Like the way that he talks, everything is so matter of fact, because I think probably one of the therapies that he was doing while he was in this like mental institution had a lot to do with like clear communication.
Yeah.
Because unclear communication is very triggering for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that has resulted in someone who says, who has no filter and says everything he thinks. And it's so fucking funny, but also like kind of admirable. And it's especially funny when he starts talking to Jennifer Lawrence. Like when they first meet at that dinner party and she's like talking crazy shit and he's just like, you have poor social skills. You have a problem.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it's a defense mechanism for him so that he doesn't like keep all the thoughts in his brain and then cause more stress, because a lot of bipolar episodes happen because of stress,
right?
Because of very, very stressful situations that the person cannot handle.
Yeah.
And so it drives them into mania. And then afterwards it usually drives them into a depressive episode, especially if he had to be hospitalized for whatever his last like enraged stage was. So a big thing that I noticed in this film is, you're right, like he does say everything very matter-of-factly, and I think a lot of it is just like so he can get the thought out of his brain instead of keeping it in there. And I think that's a really good approach for him. And he also like looks coked out all the time.
Yes, he looks crazy and it's so funny. And he talks like a little bit faster than what's comfortable and what's normal.
Yes. Yes, especially when he's talking to his parents and to Tiffany about this idea of Excelsior and this idea of like being positive and like only allowing positivity into your life and like everything, you know, there's a silver lining in everything, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, honey, like we get it, girl, get your own. But like also.
He almost has the energy of like a 5-year-old who hasn't yet like experienced negativity in the world.
It's true. Or
he's just like, well, everything's going to be okay, right? Because it has to be.
Because we're meant to be together and like that's, you know, that's love. That's how love works, right? If I lose weight, like obviously, right?
I have to do this so I can get back to Nikki. I'm going to read all of Nikki's books so that she knows that I'm serious about this.
And it's like, okay, this is the story that you're telling yourself in order for an outcome to happen that you know, or the people around you at least know, is not going to ever happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard because, and you're watching him and Tiffany interact with each other, and they share kinship because they both are dealing with severe mental illness.
Yeah.
Tiffany deals with like an anxiety disorder and also depression.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, anger issues.
I think I read in the trivia that like they had like a psychiatrist or something watch the movie and like try and diagnose her based off the movie. And they're like, she comes closest to like borderline personality disorder.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously Pat very clearly has bipolar disorder, bipolar one. And so it's very, they share that kinship of like, well, our brains are kind of broken and we are with each other and like being together in community makes it feel better. So we're going to stick with each other.
Yeah.
Even though Pat is completely resistant to the idea of hanging out with Tiffany in any way because it makes it seem like he wants to like do her.
Yeah, exactly.
And guys, I don't know if you remember, but he's trying to get
his ex-wife Nikki back. Yeah, yeah, totally. They're gonna be together. They're in love. And they're in love. To be together.
And they're gonna be together and it's fine.
But I think what separates Bradley's acting from Jennifer Lawrence's acting, and I'm not just saying this because I don't like her, I think it's genuinely true, is that I think he brings like an honesty and like a real clear emotional range that, and like also he brings a lot of delusional elements to it, like like his shit about his wife, that's all very funny, whereas I feel like Jennifer Lawrence is like, it's not that she's not honest, it's just kind of like one note and the range feels very small and like there's not room for growth, whereas Bradley Cooper, you're like, I can see how you could like improve,
yes,
or like I see silver linings in the way that you're acting.
Yes.
You know?
And you also see who Bradley's character was before this incident. Like, you see the pieces of him that existed before he became this, like, positive person.
Yeah.
Before he became, like, the person that, like, actually tried to to make his, like, to turn his life around. And you can't really see that with Tiffany's character because all you know is she's, like, this, this outwardly, like, I hesitate to call her crazy because she's not crazy, but like this outwardly aggressive person that like deals with and copes with horrible situations in very problematic ways and continues that behavior despite the fact that she knows that it's wrong and she's just rude and she's just like mean.
Yeah, I think she presents it, which is, I mean, this is it's not her fault. This is a common trope, I think, in movies about mental illness of like, I'm crazy and I fuck everyone. So like, you should be turned on by how crazy I am.
Yeah, which,
whereas he's like, I'm kind of crazy and like, that's, it's bad. But like, I just want to be with my wife.
Yeah. And for him, I think like it takes him a while to acknowledge how much damage he's actually done. Whereas for her, she claims to have forgiven herself very early on in the movie. There's this monologue that she has where she's like, I like all the messy parts about myself. Like, can you say the same thing?
Right.
Can you forgive? And he obviously can't because he's in the middle of that process.
Yes.
And I find that monologue very hard to believe because she actually...
I don't think we're supposed to think that she actually does forgive herself.
No, and so a lot of what comes out of her character's mouth is a little bit like, not annoying to me, but like frustrating to me because I'm like, well, your character can't forgive and you're also leading on this man and making him, and feeding into his delusions about Nikki, writing him a letter as Nikki, pretending that like Nikki will be somewhere. Like it's not right. It's really not right.
Well, I also think that like this kind of just speaks to the honesty thing again. Like everything Bradley Cooper says, no matter how wild it is, you're like, you're a reliable narrator. I believe you because you're so blatantly honest with yourself. Like, he's honest about when he's like off the fucking rails or when he's about to punch someone in the face.
Yeah.
Whereas Jennifer Lawrence is like very clearly unreliable. And I don't think there's any point in the movie where you can really like trust what her character is saying, which is why at the end, when it becomes a love story, I'm like, this is where I tap out, because I do not buy them as a couple and like them falling in love. It was never about that. And then all of a sudden it is. It's weird.
For me, the movie, and I wish the movie focused more on this, but for me, the movie is more about Pat's relationship with his own dad.
Yes.
And like that to me is the more interesting story.
That and just like getting away from the ex-wife narrative.
That is so much bigger to me. And I know that there is so much comedic payoff in having the game be at the same time as the ballroom dance. And like, I understand like the visual gag of the trash bag, which I am a huge fan of that visual gag.
Why are you wearing a trash bag?
Why is he wearing a trash bag? Why are you wearing a trash bag? Because sweat. I sweat.
Helps me sweat.
Helps me sweat. And then he just wears it for like the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's so good. And I understand. I understand all of these like moving parts of the film. I just wish that it focused more on these moving parts than it did on this, what ended up becoming this love story. Because I almost feel like it would have been slightly more rewarding had it just been about a man trying to fix his fucking life.
Yeah.
Then latch himself onto yet another woman who is not 100% honest with him and not 100% honest with herself. Mm-hmm. And they really don't have that much in common.
Like, I don't find it romantic or enchanting to watch two people with like unresolved mental illness feeding each other's delusions and then falling in quotes in love.
I'm not super about that.
No,
I will say I do love that they portrayed Pat's character as bipolar quite accurately. I haven't heard very much about this role like being an inaccurate representation of bipolar one, because it actually really is. And he can function in society, right? He's not like your typical, you know, stereotypical like movie bipolar, where everything he says is like fucking insane and he's always like burning shit and he's like, that doesn't happen. His anxiety and his triggers are always by like stress.
Yeah.
By severe and deep stress. Mm-hmm. And you can tell throughout the whole film. Yeah. There's a lot of stress in this man's life.
There really is.
As well as Pat Senior's.
Mostly related to the birds.
To the birds.
Also, Jackie Weaver is his mom. Incredible.
Oh, she's so good. She makes these Krabby Snacks.
Krabby Snacks and Homemades.
She's so good.
I love her. I'm really curious like what this book reads like.
I have been wanting to read this book, but I cannot bring myself to read it because I'm like, there are enough differences in the book where I'm kind of just like, I don't know that it's even the same story and I don't know if I'll like it enough.
I mean, you might like the story more.
Maybe it focuses more on like Pat and his family.
My guess, based off of what Hollywood loves to do,
Hollywood,
is that they took down the other emotional shit and raised the romance in the movie.
I feel that.
That's
feel
what
that.
My guess is, but
I feel that. But Bradley brings this like chaotic good to Pat that makes you want to root for him despite the fact that he's a shitty fucking person.
Yeah.
And despite,
because he really is trying to be a better person.
He really is. And he acknowledges that he has done some shit. Yeah. Like, he's like, okay. Like,
he's like, yeah, I should stop jogging past my ex-wife's school.
Maybe I shouldn't assault that teacher in the parking lot and demand information. Maybe that was bad. Or like, man, I accidentally hit my mom and I hate myself for that. Like, he acknowledges that like there's shit that, you know, he shouldn't have done.
Yes.
Yet he continues to do it. But there's a freshness and an honesty that Bradley Cooper brings that I think then continues on in his later work.
Yes.
That I really love and appreciate.
I agree.
Go Brad.
Go Brad.
Brad is dad.
Brad dad.
Brad is dad.
Braddy daddy. Daddy Braddy. Okay. Monica, what is the final film?
I will tell you. This movie is Nightmare Alley. It came out in 2021, written by Kim Morgan and Guillermo del Toro, directed by Guillermo, based on the novel by William Lindsay Gresham. One of the three amigos, not William. Guillermo. In 1940s New York, down on his luck, Stanton Carlyle, played by Bradley Cooper, endears himself to a clairvoyant played by Toni Collette and her mentalist husband played by David Strathern at a traveling carnival. Using newly acquired knowledge, Carlyle crafts a golden ticket to success by swindling the elite and the wealthy. Hoping for a big score, he soon hatches a scheme to con a dangerous tycoon with help from a mysterious psychiatrist played by Cate Blanchett, who might be his most formidable opponent yet.
Yeah.
Mother of Pearl.
What a plot.
This movie be crazy.
This movie also has Richard Jenkins in it. It has Willem Dafoe.
Ron Perlman plays the strong man.
It has Ron Perlman. It has Rooney Mara.
I love Ron Perlman.
He's got the longest face in the entire world.
He doesn't have a long face.
It's long as fuck. What are you talking about?
In defense of Ron Perlman's face. I wish they'd make another Hellboy.
Do you?
I do.
Okay.
But like,
how many have they made? One?
No, two. They made two.
I don't know anything about Hellboy.
Well,
the boy from hell.
You're not a fan. It's okay.
I mean,
it's okay.
Fair.
We'll make you a fan.
Okay. 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 Okay.
They're great movies.
I believe you. Okay. This movie though. Nightmare Alley.
Nightmare Alley. It's carny folk. I hate carny folk.
It's also a remake. It's a remake of a 1940s movie that was based on a novel.
Yeah. So. Called like 1940 something.
It's called Nightmare Alley.
Whatever. It came out in 1940 something. It's Nightmare Alley. Blah, blah, blah. I hate carny folk. And this movie's all about carny folk.
See, they freak me out, especially from like this time period. But this movie, I mean, used it to its advantage. It made it very, like, eerie. And
it's very scary. A lot of, like, you know, Willem Dafoe's character keeps all of these, like, specimens in jars.
Yeah.
And that really fucking freaks me
the
out.
The babies.
It's
scary.
Like, unborn babies, piglets.
What is the baby, feet. Like, ultimately supposed to symbolize or, like, be?
I don't
Did we
know.
Ever figure that out? Because I feel like they point to it so many times being like it should symbolize something
yeah.
in a jar.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe it was that kid who was in the mother's belly who miscarried.
Who miscarried?
The woman, the wife of Richard Jenkins.
Oh, well.
Who he literally forced to miscarry.
Yeah, this is true. Maybe.
Richard Jenkins plays a despicable man
despicable
in this movie.
Man.
Like a horrific bro.
Yeah.
Like he has done horrible things to women.
Richard Jenkins, surprising muse for Guillermo del Toro. But
random.
Love their partnership.
So good. I loved his character in The Shape of Water.
The Shape of the Water.
The Water with Sally What's-Her-Face and the Big Doug Man.
Doug Jones, my therapist's friend.
I've met him. So nice.
He towers
over me. I met him at the Hollywood Arclight on the night of the premiere of The Shape of Water. It was 1942, and there we were standing outside of the Cinerama Dome, waiting for the water to fall. And there he was, Mr. Doug, towering high in the sky to say, "Hello! I'm here.
My name is Doug."
And we took a photograph and then walked away.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Why wasn't Doug Jones in this movie? That's my real question.
I don't know. He could have played anyone.
I feel like he might have been in the background and we had no idea.
Maybe. Or maybe he was busy like shooting something else. This movie has a crazy production timeline.
Wild.
Because like they shot it before the pandemic, stopped it a week before the pandemic got crazy.
Yeah.
Waited like 2 years or something, finished shooting it,
yeah,
and then released the movie.
Crazy.
And then released it again in black and white, which I hate it. I hate it. And this is probably one of the only like film bro-y things I will say.
Yeah.
But I fucking hate it when people release a movie in black and white and they color it in post and they don't shoot it or light it in black and white. I hate that. It looks trashy.
Did you see this one in black and white?
No, but I just hate it when they do that in general.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It looks bad.
Black and white is very powerful when it's shot to be black and white.
Exactly. Yeah. So why just put a fucking, this isn't an Instagram photo. Don't put a filter on it.
Put that Tokyo filter on it.
Oh my God. Anyway, that's like the only thing I will say. I just don't like the way that movies look when they're just colored black and white in post. I don't like it. Okay. I don't like it.
Guillermo, you're listening.
Guillermo, change your ways.
Change. For us, Guillermo.
For me. But anyway, but all this to say, yes, they re-released it in black and white.
Yes.
I think it's like, it's, they even changed, they gave it like a subtitle of like a movie in black and white or like a song of darkness and also light, or like
a song of light and darkness.
Maybe it's time to let you wheeze, Dad. Bradley Cooper reprises his role as Rocket the Raccoon from Guardians of the Galaxy. The crime fighting raccoon. This is what I'm saying. I would have believed if Bradley Cooper showed up as a raccoon. Because carny folk are weird. There are some weird folk.
Oh my God.
There's a contortionist. There's a raccoon. We got the guy from Kermit the Frog. It's crazy over here.
Okay.
Okay.
Nightmare Hallie.
Nightmare Hallie.
I have to say, when I watched the first like half of this movie, I was very high. So my notes are a little crazy.
Oh God.
But I put in all caps, Bradley, why did you kill that man? But that is misspelled to Vag.
Why did you kill Vag man? It's funny because the entire time Bradley's character is like running from something. Okay, I have to stop and say this one thing, which is really funny because this is obviously Bradley's episode. Uh-huh. But I genuinely think that Ryan Gosling could have played Bradley Cooper's character.
That is exactly what he said.
Really? Oh my God, I'm okay, so I was watching this movie with Aaron for like the second time because I'd watched it. We wanted to watch it together. I was sitting there in my bed and we had like the whole first part of the movie pass. And he's supposed to be this like silent brooding man.
Yeah.
Like down on his luck, blah, blah, blah. And
Stan Carlyle.
And I'm sitting there like, yo, this could have been Ryan Gosling. And he would have done a great job.
I think he would have done a great job. But I don't know if the crazy towards the end would have been as impactful with Ryan.
I mean, it would have been great because like we've seen The Place Beyond the Pines.
Yeah.
He would have brought like that energy to the movie.
He would. I think it would have made it more depressing, whereas Bradley made it more like kind of crazy eyes.
That's true. That which payoff, I like. That payoff at the end, though, girl. When he's like, when he literally was like, I was born for this.
Oh, it was fucking wild.
Oh.
And he's just laughing maniacally.
He's just
guys,
maniacally
watch
laughing.
Watch this movie before we spoil any more of it for you.
I will say, if you want to watch some of the best like facial acting of all time, watch the last 30 seconds of this movie and only the last 30 seconds because Bradley goes through an entire lifetime on his fucking face and it is impossible to achieve that without the paprika seasonings that he added that he's paprika. Collected over the years. It was very entertaining.
I loved it.
I stand on my soapbox that I genuinely think that Ryan Gosling would have done a brilliant job in this movie.
He probably auditioned for
it. And he also plays like the silent guy really well.
Yes.
And he would have been perfect in that role.
Yeah. So what I did like though was getting to see Bradley Cooper be the silent guy.
It was nice, although I prefer Bradley when he's talking.
See, I really liked that you saw a new side of him in this, like, you so rarely get to see parts of Bradley where he's like super mysterious and like, you can't read me. You can't read any of my emotions. What are my intentions? Right. Who am I?
I love Bradley. And obviously we've spent this entire episode singing his praises. I sometimes don't buy the I'm quiet and I'm mysterious from Bradley.
See, I buy it.
I find it really difficult, which is what made me, what led me to think that Ryan Gosling would have been good in that beginning silent role.
Okay.
Right. Because like, this movie has a lot of tone shifts, kind of. In the beginning, it's like mysterious man, carny folk. And then
he lit a body on fire. Yeah, who is it?
Ryan Gosling would have been the star of that part of the movie.
You're right.
The middle part of the movie is like world building within this wealthy elite psychic mentalist thing.
Yeah.
Where we're introduced to Cate Blanchett and she's like this honestly, there's no other word but like this sexy, like
sexy psychiatrist,
sultry psychiatrist. And I understand that, like, I'm not out here trying to objectify this woman. If you want to hear us objectify Cate Blanchett,
listen to the
Cate Blanchett episode. She's
that
one
woman's
of the,
like a fucking marble statue.
I know we're not supposed to call women a 10, but she's a fucking she's a 10. She's a fucking 10.
She really is a thought, that hoe over there.
Yes.
Yes.
She's so good. She exudes this like power over men. Like, I would not believe, I would 100% believe that she eats men for breakfast.
No, I would be powerless.
That she
over
has like,
Cate Blanchett.
It's like,
yeah.
Cookie crunch, Honey Nut Cheerios, men, yummy. Like that's
yum, yum, yum.
Crunchy. Like that's what I believe.
Yeah.
And she's so fucking good in this movie. Watching her and Bradley Cooper make out is something else.
It's wild.
There's something about watching two very attractive Hollywood people make out. It's too much.
Especially when they're like a little older. They're not old by any circumstances.
But they're like experienced.
They're like late 40s.
Oh yeah.
Which I feel like you don't get to see a lot.
They have grit.
Yeah.
They know.
Usually you just see Bradley Cooper making out with the fucking
like a hot
Rooney Mars, you know, of the world.
Yeah. But not anymore.
Not anymore.
He makes out with Toni Collette and Cate Blanchett.
And Rooney Mara. All three of them.
Yes.
He's getting it. Toni Collette in this movie, sex goddess.
She's so good. She, again, like, I love that these women are so like powerful and sultry, and like they don't take any fucking shit from Bradley's character.
Well, you can't if you're in a fucking carnival.
Exactly. Another reason why carny folk confuse me.
Yeah, truth.
But Bradley Cooper brings this like really powerful energy to this movie, and he is like a fucking star. Again, we have to give him the credit of like he's up against all these fucking heavy hitters in this movie, and you still walk away being like, Bradley Cooper was phenomenal, which is crazy to think about because he's in a fuck ton of scenes with fucking Cate Blanchett, Richard fucking Jenkins.
Well, okay, see, this is the thing when I say that I think people underestimate Bradley Cooper, because I think to this day, even though it's been 15 years since The Hangover came out, they're still looking at Bradley Cooper and his hot face and going like, hey, well, it's just a Bradley Cooper movie, whatever. When in actuality, like, the man has been nominated many times. He's a filmmaker himself. Like, he is known for being incredibly talented.
Yeah. And passionate.
Yes, he's super passionate. And yet when he's in movies like this, people are like, and Bradley Cooper, you know, he really surprised me. And I'm like, I think he's only surprising people because no one's taking him seriously.
You know what? You're so true. You're so right.
You know?
You have true facts.
But he surprised me too, because I have the same thing about him. I like forget that he's really good.
You know what?
I forget that he went to the fucking actor studio. Like, that's not easy.
He reminds me a lot of like Brad Pitt and people's feelings about Brad Pitt.
That's true.
You know, because we said the same thing about Brad Pitt in our Brad Pitt episode. Mm-hmm. We were like, he's so gorgeous. How could he possibly be a good actor?
Yes.
Like, and people underestimate him in that way. And then you watch a movie like Seven and you watch him go, what's in the box?
What's in the box?
And you're like, I'm in the box.
It's me.
It's me. I'm rooting for you. So I'm a big fan of Bradley Cooper.
I'm a very big fan. And I also love, this movie feels very theatrical to me. Yes. Like, it feels like a Tennessee Williams play.
I was about to say, this movie has a lot of theatricality.
Yeah, it's genuinely gorgeous. Feels like a fucking Tennessee Williams play, because it gets in, it's like fantastical, but also realistic, but then also gets kind of mad in the end.
It's crazy because it doesn't feel like a Guillermo movie.
No.
It doesn't have that like additional element that makes it his movies. I'm very proud of him for venturing into like this it's a true period drama. Like,
yes, it has like, despite feeling fantastical, it has no magical realism in it, because everything is smoke and mirrors.
Yes.
So like, there genuinely is no fantasy in this movie.
There's
which
nothing
is crazy.
It's absolutely insane. Everything that they're doing is very practical.
Yeah,
like the mentalism is, there's no fantasy in that. Every like, it's crazy. It's kind of like, I mean, the end becomes a fucking Agatha Christie novel.
Yeah. This is true.
This is what I mean by like, the movie is like three movies in one movie. There are like so many tone shifts where it's like the mysterious man, and then it's like the man in the wealthy, you know, in like running this hustling game.
Yes.
And then in the end, it turns into like a true like neo-noir film.
Yeah.
Like, this is a mystery. What? It's also been Cate Blanchett the whole time.
The acting is very like old Hollywood melodrama, yes, which I love. I'm really happy that these actors didn't read the script and go like, where's the truth in these roles?
They know they were
where's
like
my real human emotion.
Let me
roles?
Play this.
Yeah, they're like, let me put on the voice and present this story to you because I think this movie like deserved that.
It's so good. It's so, so good. I, you know what? One of my regrets is not being able to go see this in the movie theater.
Yeah.
I think this would have been quite the experience in the theater.
It would have been dope.
You know, and yeah. I know that like, I know there's a massive sort of like shift in the way that we watch movies. And I totally get that. Being an introvert, I'm really happy watching a movie at home.
Right.
Genuinely. Also like my snacks are here. I can take off my shoes.
Your dog.
My dog's, well.
You're like, I like getting away from her.
I like getting away from her. But it's interesting because we're seeing like movies in theaters for less and less time. Mm-hmm. So you can't catch the movie like 3 weeks after it comes out. It's fucking gone.
Yeah.
And they aren't playing them as many times. Like I get that people love their Marvel movies. I understand. But every movie theater keeps playing them all the time. And so there's no room for like other movies. And so they leave really early.
Yeah.
I remember when you could like catch a movie 3 months later and it was still there.
I think a lot of people don't realize that so much of film, and this is very like film bro soapboxy, but whatever, like so much of what makes like good films good is because they were shot knowing, like with the screening in mind.
Yeah. With like, you're an adult, you're in pitch black, you're in darkness. You are with other people, so you could feel like the vibes. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, what are people thinking about this? Like, how's it going?
Everything Nicole Kidman says in her AMC thing.
Correct.
True.
Let's go to the movies. Let's go back to the movies. It's magical. At the IMC.
The IMC theater.
The theater where movies are magic.
It's so true though. It's so true. It's definitely want to see this in on the big screen.
Yeah, but you can't anymore. It's like gone.
I know.
It's been replaced with a black and white one.
We'll be able to see a screening of it at some point
at
in a
some
theater
point,
for
yeah.
sure.
I hope that more and more people put put home theaters in their homes.
Yeah.
I think that'd be cool. I'm
gonna
know.
Put that on the list for my future home.
Yeah, you know, the future home that no one will ever be able to afford because all
well,
the houses
if
in
we
California
pool our money
crazy.
And buy
That's
a
true.
Big house where we split it in half,
we could buy a McMansion. You know where
you guys down?
You know where I could buy property right now?
Where?
Austin, Texas.
Well, probably not. Things are getting expensive. You could probably go to fucking Minnesota.
That's true.
Sure.
Wyoming? Oh no, people are also moving there because of Kanye.
Oh God, yay.
Yay. Uncut Jobs.
Uncut Jobs.
Oh, God. Adam Sandler deserves better.
Genuinely. He's probably looking at her just like, what the fuck are you doing?
You're ruining people's perception of the movie.
Yeah, which was already not celebrated enough.
No.
Don't get me started.
I hope this whole thing with Julia Fox creates like another frenzy of like, let's all watch Uncut Gems.
Yeah. And let's,
I really
can
do.
We give it an Oscar after the fact?
Like a posthumous Oscar. For like, cause you know, the movie is dead now cause it's no longer in theaters and it's many years
it's been
old.
Several years. Yeah.
But let's give it an Oscar anyway.
I think we should. That was really the biggest light of like the
really,
last 5 years. I think
it made my hair fall out. Yeah. If a movie can make some hairs fall out, some hair follicles, then
some hair follicles,
you know,
from your head.
What are you gonna do about it? Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems.
Well,
twas Nightmare Alley.
Twas Nightmare. Twas Bradley.
Yay!
Yay! Monica.
Bonjour.
What have you dabbled in?
I have dabbled in many, many things.
Please tell me.
But I will share, what is the big one?
The Scam.
Oh my God.
Tell us everything.
Okay, so I'm a very paranoid person when it comes to my finances.
Yes.
I'm the kind of person that like checks my credit score every single day just to make sure. We live in tumultuous times.
Yeah.
And so, It was very interesting because the other day, like about a week ago, like on Monday, mm-hmm. I like checked my credit card statement and I noticed like all of these charges for like a gun store in Kentucky.
The fuck?
And like ammunition in Kentucky. And like people like tried to buy like thousands of dollars, not tried, they succeeded.
Oh my God.
To buy thousands of dollars worth of guns. Like almost $3,000 worth of like guns and ammunition on my credit card.
Oh my God.
And so I called my bank and I was like, what the fuck? And Aaron was like calling the fraud department and he was like, what the fuck's going on? And they were like, wow, yeah, this looks like fraud. We'll help you take care of this. But yeah, I thought it was, I'm like, and now I think to myself, like, where did I leave my credit card / where did they get my credit card information?
It must have just been a hack online.
But then I'm like, where did they hack?
I mean, it could have been anywhere. I told you that email that I got a few weeks ago about my email being hacked or whatever?
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. And they emailed me and they were just like, we have your passwords. And I was like, well, you certainly do because you just emailed them to me.
Okay, but is it just me or is like the online scams and stuff like just getting more and more severe?
Yes, cybersecurity is a very real thing at the moment.
And so now I have on my list to like change all my passwords mm-hmm. and like delete old accounts for things that I don't use anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to do the same thing. That sucks. Did they give you your money back or are they going to?
I mean, it takes like,
a while.
I have beef with banks because it takes 90 days to resolve the problem.
Yeah.
So you don't actually know. What I did was I like froze my credit cards. Uh-huh. Well, those credit cards that they like use. And they like sent me new ones. So I have new ones. But it's going to take like a really long time for them to figure out whether or not it was fraud, even though it was.
It was, yeah.
So I don't live in Kentucky.
No.
I'm not out here trying to buy guns.
You also ain't a gunslinger.
I'm not. I'm really not. So that this is just serves as a good reminder, everyone.
I'm so sorry.
Check your credit cards.
Dude, I was doing that yesterday.
Check everything.
The confusing part though is that when you sign up for those like credit monitoring services, mm-hmm. they send you alerts constantly and the alerts are constantly just like Experian credit report. Someone checked your credit. Did you authorize this? And I was like, it looks like someone's checking my credit like
all the time.
Once a fucking week. Yeah. I don't know who it is. I'm not going to report it every time.
I also have like identity theft insurance.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm just sitting here like, we need to figure this shit out. Either one of them governments
war
out
on
there.
Cybercrime.
Honestly.
I mean, warranted.
We need to figure this shit out. I don't know what the fuck is going on, but yeah.
Oh God, so. I'm so sorry.
Anyway, what have you dabbled in?
Well, I got back from New York, which was exciting. Yes, I went to Fashion Week, and then I came back. But the best part of being there was I got to see Company on Broadway.
You did, didn't you?
I did, and it was amazing. I cried during the opening number. I still have a lot of feelings, and I still prefer the original. But I did really like this. Sorry. Aaron's shocked.
Wow. Do tell.
Okay, for those of you who don't know and don't care about musical theater, the original Company is like the lead is a guy, and obviously the songs were written for a man. Which
Bobby.
I am totally fine with gender bending things, but I think like the story is more like surprising and impactful in regards to a man because of like stereotypes, because I think it is more surprising to see a man like of his age and his stature with friends around him like that, who like he used to be a womanizer, etc. And now he's realizing like, no, fucking human connection. That's what's important to me. Like that feels more touching to me than a woman realizing she needs human connection, because I feel like that's not an uncommon realization. But I really liked it. I thought she was incredible. And I think it's still a unique story, because I think it kind of makes the story more about like pressures upon women and how women are expected to like get married and have children and want all of these things. But the point of the show is that like, yeah, you should want these things. Like that's the message of Company, whether you agree with that message or not, you know?
Yeah, I guess for me, watching that version of Company was the only time that I like even remotely liked Company, and I still don't like Company. Like, even after watching
See, it's my
that,
favorite show.
I don't like it. I think that it has very antiquated views about, like...
I agree. I just still think it's... I think it's a beautiful show. Like, the story it tells, whether you agree with the story or not, I think is beautiful.
I think that I disagree with the story itself, like, being beautiful, because I think the story itself is what irks me. I think the songs are beautiful.
Yeah, the songs are really pretty.
I think the songs are really pretty, and like, in a vacuum, the songs work. Like, the songs don't need to exist with the show for the for the songs to be good.
Right.
They tell... I like the songs a lot because they tell the story within the song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even, you know, the song Being Alive, which is, like, the most fucking... famous song from that goddamn musical, which I hear all the fucking time and I'm very salty about it. That song is a whole fucking three-act structure in itself. It starts off like, I don't want this, and then it's like, maybe I do, and then it's like, I do want it. So there you go. Beginning, middle, end.
Yeah, and I thought the production value of the show, incredible.
So good.
This is going to get me like crucified in the musical theater community, but I'm not a Patti LuPone fan.
I'm also not a Patti LuPone
still
fan.
I especially wasn't after seeing her in this, because I'm just like, it really felt like she was phoning it in and was like, of course I'm Joanne. But I'm like, not of course. Like, that role requires something.
It was funny because I very unpopular, but I celebrate whenever I get an understudy.
Uh-huh.
I know that people get upset about it because they're like, I paid money to go see this famous person in this role.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm sitting here like, oh my God, understudy? Fuck yeah.
Because especially in Broadway, like, the understudy is the person who should have gotten it.
They work their fucking asses off.
They
and
really
they
do.
Literally like leave it all on the stage floor because they're like, we never know when we're gonna get this opportunity again. We don't know when Patti LuPone's gonna get sick again. Like, we're gonna fucking give it our all. Because when we went to go see Company, Joanne's character was an understudy, and she...
But did she crush?
She killed. She murdered. She Patty fucked.
Patty really phoned it in. Like, and with all...
I can imagine that.
And like, I have nothing against aging people doing what they love, but she is aging and she has to do choreography and like simply couldn't. And that was like difficult to watch.
It's funny because like... the Joanne that we saw, again, she fucked. Like, her high kicks were like...
I'm like, yeah, Patty could not dance. She was like, even with just the hand choreography, it was like barely there.
She was sultry and like honest and enraged in a way only that character can be.
Yeah.
She was so good. Like, genuinely, and I fucking hate this show. I hate that character. I hate everything about this goddamn show. I was delighted.
See, it's my favorite fucking show. The thing that I didn't like is I liked a lot of the production value in this. I thought it was really cool, and obviously it's Broadway, it's incredible. But they turned certain aspects of it, like the transitions, into almost like magical realism, where Bobby is like having a scary nightmare about turning 35, which I think is a fun take.
It is.
Prefer when we treat it like all of these things are actually happening. That is my preference for this show.
I just liked the set design. I thought it was so interesting.
Super cool. And I love how all the 35s were hidden everywhere.
The 35s were amazing.
Very cool.
And it made me feel like, oh my God, the 35s are fucking closing in. And
yes,
I love that.
It was perfect.
I also loved like the use of neon. I think it's so fun and funky and like very, very millennial, which I really appreciate. Cause like, she's turning 35, like, of course. And the other thing is like, I loved all of like down the rabbit hole, come up somewhere else.
Yeah. I thought
that
it
was
really
cool.
And I liked it a lot, but when I have to decide like what my favorite production of Company is, I still prefer the more realistic take, I guess on it. But yeah, it was beautiful. And what was funny is that this was only my second time ever going to New York. And the first time was literally half a lifetime ago when I was 13.
Oh,
when I saw
depressing.
Shrek the Musical during its first Broadway run. Mm-hmm. And the guy who played Lord Farquaad was Christopher Sieber, who was also in this production of Company.
Oh my
and
God.
And I was like, this is truly full circle and very funny.
It is full circle. God, I love New York.
It was great. 10 out of 10. It snowed when I left and then it was beautiful.
And then you weren't there for when all the snow turned into disgusting black sludge.
No. Well, so I saw a little bit of that left over when I flew in. Mm-hmm. But then it was like their warm period. It got to be like 60 degrees for a couple days. And then the day I left it, I opened my windows that morning and it was just fucking snow.
Yeah. And then you left before it turned into disgusting diarrhea snow.
Yeah. No, it was just beautiful.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love New York.
Yeah, that was great. So that's what I dabbled in.
Okay.
Well,
hot.
On that note,
don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Bye, Monica.
Goodbye, Jessica.